This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mari Forth.
I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from unceded Gadigal land.
And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. We'd love it if you would subscribe to our feed. Please go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. You'll get your true crime on Tuesdays, as well as helping to keep the program going.
If you've already subscribed, thank you. It makes a big difference. Mari, before we get to today's property, there's big true crime news that broke while we were on our hiatus.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. In the early hours of November the 13th, 2022, four University of Idaho students were killed. They were Ethan Chapin, 20, Kaylee Goncalves, 21, Zana Knodel, 20, and Madison Mogan, 21. On December the 30th, Pennsylvania State Police and FBI SWAT took a suspect into custody. He is Brian Koberger, 28. Court documents show that he was linked to the crime scene through DNA evidence on a knife sheath. He has a public defender. He agreed to extradition and was brought to Latah County Jail on January the 4th, where he's being held without bail. There's an excellent episode of that chapter on YouTube where Mike breaks down the story so far, and he dropped that 2 weeks before the arrest, so I'm sure he'll do an update. So if you need a really good 30-minute catch-up on the case up until the arrest, we will link that in the show notes. So, Mari, there's a lot of true crime interest in the case on Twitter and everywhere, and, I mean, we're interested, of course.
Yeah.
But I just want to sort of bring up a slightly off-putting note that I'm feeling from some of the commentators, not all, where they're saying, where's the evidence? Why was he arrested? Well, there's no evidence. You can't arrest him. There's no evidence. It's like, prove to me that you have the right person. I'm not in law enforcement, Mari. So no. I do not expect to be kept up to date on evidence in an ongoing investigation. So not our listeners, but pass on to other people, you know, curious, use your beautiful brain. Obviously, don't take everything as read. Do more reading. It's not research, my friends. It's reading. Do more reading and also have patience, because I'm sure that every minute of the trial will be covered. Yeah. I mean, having said that, of course, we love amateur sleuths with real skills and knowledge, thinking of the Bethune family who were instrumental in finding Gabby Petito's van. But Mari, have you been following this case?
Yes, I have. I mean, everybody has it because it was just real shocking, you know, to have four students just what feels like were like randomly murdered and just having no clues was very, very scary. And then it's like, oh, we found a guy, you know, so that too, I'm like, oh, awesome. Like, I'm glad they found him. And I was wondering too. I was like, okay, well, what happened? What led to it? So there's actually a really good episode of Last Podcast on the Left, their side stories episode that just dropped this week. Henry and Ben talk about a little bit more background on about Brian Koberger. They actually even had a listener who went to school with him write in about him, give a little bit more background. And it is very disturbing. From what they say, it seems like Brian Koberger, who was also a criminology, he was pursuing a PhD in criminology. From allegedly, he may have been trying to be like the next BTK, like style. Like he thought he was a going to be a criminal mastermind. But again, we don't know. Like Sarah said, there's still a lot of information that is being withheld due to, you know, the trial process. So I'm pretty sure it'll come out. But if you want a little bit more, definitely go check out that last podcast on the left episode as well.
Yeah, excellent. We'll link that too. So Mari, what did we watch this week?
Let's open today's file. We watch Death in the Dorms, a 6-episode series from ABC News Studio on Hulu. So we do not have a guest this week.
It's just me, Sarah. Yay! Happy New Year. Happy 40th.
Yes.
This is the 40th episode. Thanks everybody for listening all this time. I guess our podcast is now officially middle aged. Not quite.
Yes, which is fine. We're good. We age like fine wine. I feel
absolutely delicious.
So I'm glad it's just us. And of course, we'll have more wonderful guests this season. If you have any suggestions on any shows you want us to cover, any movies you want to. Want us to cover, of course we'll give you our plugs and you can send it there. If you have any special guests you want us to ask and reach out to, we'll take those recommendations as well. But other than that, let's get to the crime. So this series has 6 self-contained episodes telling the stories of college students who were killed at the very start of their adult lives. Andy Delvesco was killed and burnt in a fire by a stranger. Christian Aguilar was stalked and murdered in a jealous rage by his partner's ex-boyfriend. Yardley Love was beaten to death by her ex-boyfriend. Michael Dang was killed in a fraternity hazing event by over 30 other young men. Samantha Josephson got into a car, mistaking it for her Uber, and was killed by the driver. And finally, Katie Autry was raped and burnt by a stranger and later succumbed to her injuries. In all cases, a culprit was quickly found. In all but one, there was a conviction. So let's talk about how well the series does in telling these stories.
Yes, it's quite a lot when you hear it in a list.
Yeah, it is.
I wouldn't recommend watching them one after the other after the other, I don't think.
Yes, because that's what I did. And it was a lot. I did take a break after like the first 3 episodes and then got back to it. You know, nobody was forcing me to watch. We watch whatever we want to watch on here, and then we talk about whatever we want to watch, especially when it comes to series. But the series was good enough to hold my attention through all of the episodes. But I definitely agree. It's one of those things where it's very heavy. You know, this is one of, for us, you know, we dabble in murder, but not too much. But these episodes, it is your typical ID Discovery style series where it's an overarching theme in the title, and then each episode is a standalone, and the murder is tied into the title. So Sarah, what were your first thoughts or overarching thoughts of the series?
Well, just to spoil my magnifying glasses, this is an excellent, excellent series. So ABC News Studios has done a very good job. Each episode kind of unfolds the same way. We start with the victim, which I absolutely love. We do not start with the crime. I mean, there's the little sizzle reel, which I hate. I think, you know, I know it's industry standard. It's like, I'm just about to watch it. I already pushed play. It's okay. But, you know, I understand that requirement. So we straight away, we are focusing on the victim. And so just to run down a typical episode, we'll start with the victim's mother, sister, father. In one case, the mother is too distraught to speak even all this time later, and has their attorney speak for them. So the cases range from 2002 to 2019. Mm-hmm. So we get to know the victim, their name, what they were like. There'll be a sister, there'll be a friend, there'll be photographs. And then really interesting introduction of a student journalist.
Yeah, always.
Always. So this I really liked. Like the second time it happened, I thought, oh, and the third time it happened, I thought, oh. So they find editors or journalists that were working on the student newspaper at the time. This gives you this double idea. It's they were young students themselves. And now, because in some cases it's 10 or even 20 years later, they are now established journalists. So we love hearing from journalists generally, but particularly from someone who could take the flavor of the place at the time. Then there's an introduction of the police. Really nice processy, because the cases, unfortunately, are very simple. There's pretty much a straight line from the event to the perpetrator, and the perpetrators are all captured within, like, it seems like days or indeed a couple of weeks in one case. But the police very much are running down the process, which I really like. We went here, we spoke to this person, then we found this, then we tested it for this. And because I suppose there's no, don't look for a twist or a turn. You'll know who the killer is immediately because they say, and she went out with her boyfriend, blah. And you go, okay, killer. So it's not trying to trick you or fool you. It's taking you through the process of what it's like for the people actually in the case. And then they finish with the conviction in all cases, except the last episode. I really liked this series. And they had 911 calls, and they had crime scene photographs, and they had reenactments. But for some reason, it worked really well. Mari, what was your overall thought?
I agree. I think, like, with those, like, ID Discovery series, you know, your Southern Fried Homicides, your Deadly Women's, you know, there, it's because you have so many on that network, right? It comes down to, do you like how that story is being told? That's why you watch those series. Like, that's why for me, like, I love People Investigates on ID Discovery. We did A Crime to Remember. I love A Crime to Remember because I love how they unfold the cases. And this is one of those, like, you'll either immediately love how the story is being told or you won't. Just depending on what your flavor is, like, how do you like your true crime stories to be told? You know, I love that the reenactments here are whenever a reenactment is like a non-talking reenactment, I like those. Like, I don't like the reenactments where they're like, it's like a scene, you know what I'm saying? Where they're like, they're showing like people fighting and you can hear them talking and stuff. Like, that always seems kind of cheesy to me. So these reenactments are very much of those like artistic shots, shadowy figures, like, you know what I'm saying? But in between those reenactments, we are getting real police photos, like, of the crime scene. And they'll tell you when it's a police photo. And I, like, we did get a few like unprompted crime scene shots, but not many. And when they explain the victim's injuries, they use the like the coroner sketches. If you've been watching these shows, you know exactly what it is, but like the front and the back of the body, the markings of, you know, either the stab wounds or whatever it is. I really appreciate that. Of course, as somebody with a science background, I like when they go into what actually was, what happened to the victim, what caused their deaths, you know, and how, just so that they can tie it back to when they catch the murderer and stuff like that. So it really was. And it felt like, it's so funny because if you look at the poster for it, like Death in the Dorms, again, it reminds me of, you know, it reminds me of the cheesy ID Discovery stuff, you know, because I say that as somebody who loves ID Discovery series. I love them, but some of them are just so cheesy, and it's just a different way to look at wives with knives, you know. It's like a different way to look at the same cases.
If it rhymes, we cover it.
Exactly. But I feel like that package of that doesn't do it justice, because I feel like when you actually watch the episodes, it's very like Dateline. If you like Dateline, right? Am I wrong there? Like a
2020? No, I was thinking exactly that. I mean, it's like Dateline, but without the narration. So we don't have our lean king, Keith Morrison. But I was really impressed with how well we were carried through the story. Generally, the stories are told chronologically, but if they have to flip back in time because something was discovered or something changed, I felt really situated where I was in time as well.
Yeah. And I think about the first episode really a lot, which was probably, I think it might have been my favorite episode. I think
they led really strongly with this first episode, I think.
Yes. Talking about Andy Delvesco, that's our victim at UCLA. And maybe because the crime itself, it was a mystery. That's another thing. I'm sorry. I'm bouncing back and forth. But a lot of these episodes, I did not know the crimes. I didn't know the crimes. So I was along for the ride. Like Sarah said, they do a good job of taking you along the with the ride. So, but this first episode, Andy Delvesco, there's a fire in her it's not necessarily a dormitory, but it's like off campus housing for the students, for her sorority. And there's a fire and all of the sorority members come out. They put out the fire. She's the only one unaccounted for. And unfortunately, they find her body in her room because that's where the fire originated from. And, you know, that's where it starts at. But then you go back and you find out that her neighbor who lived above her heard noises that night and called the police. Mm-hmm. And the police came and did nothing. Like, mm-hmm. that unfolding of that case was just, oh, it was so frustrating and sad, because basically the police came and looked around. They didn't knock on any doors or anything, even though the neighbor had said she heard screaming coming from Andy's room. They didn't even knock on the door, and come to find out the killer was basically crouching inside waiting for the police to leave. And it's just before the fire was even set. And it's just so frustrating. Sarah, a few points on episode one before, like, we just, you know, move on a little bit?
I think, look, as I say, a really strong start. This was, a 5 magnifying glass episode for me. They didn't put a foot wrong. Once I realized that it was really good, I was sort of almost waiting to say, what can I knock some points off for? But I thought it was pretty faultless. I mean, there's a lot of blonde sorority girls talking to us. It's fine. She was a sorority girl. They're people too. I felt the treatment of the family was very respectful. I also didn't know any of these cases, so it was very interesting to really delve quite deeply into Andy Delvesco's life and the people that she affected. And what was interesting to me, as I realized, these sort of fairly straightforward cases, other than this one where the police were called and went away, the police are actually fairly good at their jobs, surprisingly.
Right.
Maybe this was 10 years ago, maybe things have changed. But I also, they gave us the beginning of another theme, which is what the friends and family have done after the death. So there are various foundations and campaigns that have arisen from, and indeed laws that have arisen from these deaths. One thing that really struck me, and they did this beautifully, and I had to just send you crying face emojis, was that Andy had a little dog, Shea Panda, and Shea Panda survived the fire, but was very unwell, injured, of course. Andy's mother, Leslie, wanted to see her daughter. Now, we saw, that's when I realized that they had shown us quite a brief flash of the body in the crime scene. It's unexpected, but it wasn't too horrifying. It's like you just got an impression of it and it was in black and white. You thought, oh, okay. I wondered why they'd shown us that. But then Leslie says that she wanted to see her daughter to say goodbye. And we are thinking, no, please don't, please don't. And she goes to the vet hospital to see Shea Panda, who's still alive at that point. And the vet says, you know, time's up for Shay. Can you let her go? And it was this fantastic, heartbreaking moment of Leslie saying goodbye to her daughter through her daughter's dog, and they held the dog as the dog went to sleep and went, as she says, went to kiss Andy because they couldn't. And she realized then that she, what her daughter must look like, and therefore that she wouldn't see her. How did this strike you? It wasn't at all, I didn't feel it was sentimental or deliberately over emotional. What about you, Murray?
I agree. I thought it was great storytelling and a sense of like, this is what they did with this show. It's like they talked to, like you said, they talked to most of the family members. So not only are you giving us the victim's humanity, which we always ask for on, you know, on this podcast and this rewatch, because, you know, as people who consume true crime, we always say we want to do it ethically. And ethically is, you know, wanting to pay homage to the victims and not just treat them as another body, as another number that were, you know, these were people's lives that were taken, you know, and, you know, you want to show deference to that. And I think this series does a great job of that, you know, seeing that pain and seeing that hurt, it doesn't feel like it's exploitive. It feels like it's cathartic in a way for the family members, because ultimately from basically every family member after the end of it, they say they want this not to happen to anybody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, they want another family not to have to go through this. And I do think that media like this helps in like protection and prevention and all of that. So
the sliding door to hurt, this is not victim blaming. This was how that sort of apartment block operated. They all had their doors unlocked because they were in and out of each other's rooms at all times. So it's Leslie saying we want to trust, but please don't. Exactly. Leslie also says treasure the moments that we do have with each other. And normally I'm a bit, you know, hard-hearted about that kind of stuff, but that really got me. I thought, yes, Leslie, you're absolutely right. I did send you a note, which was stay stupid, criminals.
Please, yeah,
please stay stupid. The awful man who did this crime kept the bloody blanket, his bloody tank top, and the knife that he killed Andy with in a trash bag in his cupboard. So thank you for that. Because as soon as the police got their search warrant, it was like, oh, okay, here's everything. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and he was a student at Fresno State, if I remember correctly. And he was not, he had no criminal history either. And, right?
Well, as we find out in one of the other cases, there were violent outbursts that had never been spoken of to the police, to campus security, in that case, the young man's coach. So if when we get on to episode 3, Yardley Love, that young man did have violent history, but it wasn't recorded because, you know, nobody said anything. Speak up, everybody. Speak up, please.
Exactly. So it was just very unfortunate. Very good police work, though, on this case, because they were able to connect her murder to like a burglary that happened across the street. And that's what broke the crime.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sonos speakers were stolen from from a party. The police realized that in order to use your Sonos speakers, you have to register them. Mm-hmm. They went to Sonos and they said, tell us if anyone registers these speakers. And lo and behold, the perpetrator's roommate fired them up one day and they had them. I mean, fascinating.
It's the first domino that leads to catching Andy's killer. And it's
yes.
very fascinating. Yeah. So, I mean, episode one does a very great job of getting this series like up and going and rolling.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We definitely said we want to talk about 1 and 2 very much. So I thought if Andy's story got the story going, I think Christian Aguilar's story really gave you a sense of community in the storytelling. And it brings it back to how these were students that were killed, you know, from universities. And Christian Aguilar's story is very sad because he was a freshman going to University of Florida, and he was killed basically like not too long after arriving on campus. And when they speak to the editor, the former editor of the Alligator, Julia Glum, she talks about how the tragedy was nobody really got to know him. Because they didn't get the chance. And even though people didn't get to know him, the University of Florida, one of my alma maters, actually, they still rallied around him when at first he was just thought to be missing. University of Florida actually gave him a post-hummus biomedical engineering degree. So he like officially was a Gator. Like they embraced his family. Carlos, his father, was very shaken up, very on the scene as the moment his son goes missing. And the sense of community that the University of Florida creates in this episode and what we gather from this episode was really what I think showed us probably why this series was created, you know, to show like stuff can happen on these campuses. And it's when things like terrible things like this happen on the campus, it kind of brings the community together. What do you think, Sarah?
This was very powerful. I think not that, you know, one life is more important than another, but it was very interesting that in episode two, we have a male victim. Mm-hmm. We think of, you know, campus killings and dorm killings as young women being killed. And let's face it, the majority of it is young women. Right. Uh-huh. But here we have Christian. We get to hear of his life, first generation American, the pride of his father and his brother as they speak of him is, it's really heartwarming. So Carlos, his father, is really the center of this episode. He immediately goes to Florida to the place where his son was, and he begins to search for him immediately overnight because Carlos's girlfriend and the killer are the ones that say, oh, he's missing. Oh, we haven't seen him. She had nothing to do with it. Sorry, I lumped them together. But here is what we often see, which is the killer involving themselves in the search for the missing person, or indeed at the crime scene. He is out there alone searching, and overnight, at where his son was last seen. He gives a very shaky interview on radio, and the next morning, hundreds of people turn up to help. And then it becomes, as you say, this incredible coming together of the community. Julia Glum, the editor, talks about students would get up, go to their class, go and search, go home, go to sleep, get up and do it again. So every moment that they had that wasn't studying or sleeping, they were out there. And it was an incredible bringing together of the community. It was just such a sad story.
Yeah, a very, very sad story and very interesting. I love how they had the student body president there as well, Sabine Justillian. She was talking about how she shared a similar background to Christian. She also was from South Florida. She was the first generation, and how it personally affected her at the time. And just again, showing how you can feel for somebody and help somebody that you don't know. And Christian's background, it's one of those things where, like, he was one of the first in his family to go to college. And that's just the sadness about it. And for him to eventually be murdered by somebody he considered a friend. So if you're looking for, like, a quote unquote twist, this might be the only episode where it's kind of a twist, because we are introduced to the Pedro Bravo and Erica Freeman. Erica is Christian's girlfriend. Pedro is his friend from middle school. We are introduced to him, both of them, when the crime happens. And then, you know, they do some more investigation, and then it comes back around that it was indeed Pedro who murdered Christian so that he could get back with Erica. It's a very sad story, because they all grew up in South Florida together. They went to, like, middle school together. Pedro and Christian were friends. Pedro and Erica actually dated for most of high school, like from sophomore year of high school to senior year of high school. And Erica actually testified that even that last year that they were together, she was actually very afraid of Pedro. Like, she knew that their relationship had grown toxic, and she wanted to end the relationship. But every time that she went to end the relationship, he would threaten his life, his own life. There was a lot of emotional manipulation going on, which is sad, you know, and something that happens to a lot of people in relationships like that. And because of that, she decided to stay with him until they went off to college. So Christian, going back to our victim, he went to University of Florida. I want to say he got a scholarship, but I'm not sure. I'm sorry if I am misremembering that. He went to University of Florida. Erica went to Santa Fe Community College, that was right near University of Florida. Pedro, actually, I know for a fact, Pedro got a scholarship to the full ride to University of Miami. So University of Miami is where they're from. University of Florida and Santa Fe College is in Gainesville, Florida. That's 5 hours away. And so when Erica and Christian went off to Gainesville, that's when after Erica had broken up with Pedro, her and Christian finally were like, well, we're single now. And they finally had just started dating. They were only dating maybe a few weeks or months before Christian was killed. And Erica testifies that she actually didn't tell Pedro that they were dating, because she just thought that he was in a bad place. She never said that she thought he would murder Christian or that he was violent. He made her think that he was just very suicidal and very fragile. And while Erica and Christian are in their relationship, exploring their relationship, Pedro is back home in Miami, stewing, writing, love letters to Erica, thinking she's going to get her back. Like, he dropped out of the University of Miami, a full ride scholarship. He dropped out to then go enroll at Santa Fe Community College. And
he pursued her.
And Erica says in the series, he just popped up. Like, they didn't even know he was coming up there. He just popped up. And when he did pop up, he said, okay, I'm going to Santa Fe College now, guys, I need your help. He reached out to both of them saying that he was like depressed and he needed their help. And he basically lured them in with a false sense of sympathy. And then he the night of Christian's death, he asked Christian to come talk to him in his car. He lured Christian into his car. He drugged him. He gave him like Gatorade that was laced with drugs, and then he strangled him, and then he disposed of his body. Erica was none the wiser of this. All Erica knew was that they were going to go talk. So immediately she was calling them that night. Nobody was responding. When Pedro did pick up, Erica was like, "Well, where's Christian?" And Pedro was like, "Oh, I just left him on the side of the road somewhere." And so that's when they went and they reported Christian missing. And that's why a big man search had happened so quickly, because initially Pedro was just like, "Oh, we got into a fight and I just let him out the car." And there's hope that maybe he was still alive, but they did some really good police work, and Pedro started to reveal what actually happened.
Yeah, so Pedro, another stupid criminal, he had Christian's backpack stuffed in his wardrobe inside another suitcase. And he also had these journals with plans to get Erica back and to kill Christian. So thank you for that, Pedro. I wish you hadn't done it, but having done it, thank you for keeping all that evidence where you could be charged. Now, both these cases, episode one and episode two, life without parole is the sentence for these young, also young people. Pedro clearly had mental health issues and needed help that nobody could recognize that he needed or could get him to have help with. I do not have sympathy for him, but I can see that he also, you know, was troubled. Reach out for help, everybody. And if other people around you need help, force them to have it. Force them to have help. So Father Carlos says he wants to change hate into love. And the family has made the Christian Aguilar Search and Rescue Foundation, which has dogs that can go out and search. And as Carlos says, that's his whole job now, is going out with these dogs at no cost to the families of the people being searched for. And he says, we have had some successful searches and some unsuccessful searches. So Carlos has kept himself. It's very interesting. And we saw this with the man who's in Texas Equisearch. Remind me of his name.
Tim Miller.
Mm-hmm. These, both of the men in this case, who choose to remain in that place of searching and often grief. Mm-hmm. And this, the strength that would take. And when Carlos talks to us, he's so warm. He's so strong. He's so proud. He was a very impressive man. And I thought, you decided to do something good from Christian's death, which is to have the Search and Rescue Foundation. And then when he said he actually works in it and goes out with the dogs, he has the dogs himself as well. I thought, you're choosing to remain in this space No wonder you have to remind everybody to turn hate into love, because it would be easy to go down a bit of a rabbit hole, which we feel others might do.
Yeah, I completely agree. So those are the first two episodes. Again, there's six in total. Sarah, if you want to highlight any of the other episodes, maybe like spoiler free, what was another episode that you found very fascinating, or one that you didn't like?
Yeah, look, I liked them all to the first two very much. I liked them all to a greater or lesser extent. I found the episode four, the Michael Deng episode, very interesting, because this is a very different case. This is Greek life and the hazing of pledges. Mm-hmm. And through Michael's death, there are laws now which stop young men primarily, you know, hitting each other and doing these terrible. Help me out here. What's going on here with this hazing of pledges? I just don't get it.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a very American thing, and they even highlight that in the documentary. As somebody who again, one of my first alma mater, we are a sorority and fraternities. Most Black sorority and fraternities originated on Howard's campus, so we are a very like sorority fraternity heavy university. And you know, hazing, you hear stories. If you're not in the fraternity or the sorority, like they say in that episode, the Michael Deng episode, it's that cloak of secrecy that makes that sorority or fraternity, like that's what makes them special, but that also is what can become a danger to the people who pledge to it. So it's sororities and fraternities are big things over here in America. And, you know, this isn't the first type of hazing situation that we've had over here. There's been numerous instances, and luckily a good many states have anti-hazing laws on the books.
This was a fascinating episode. I won't spoil it, but with, I see here, 37 defendants eventually.
Yeah.
Very processy with the police there. I was taken through step by step. It was fascinating. I mean, so just tragic. And they're all tragic, but the stupidity of this tragedy was, I mean, it's 10 years ago and still Mary, Michael's mother, cannot speak of it. And so Douglas Fairburg, the family attorney, speaks on their behalf. But that to me was the other outstanding episode. What about you, Murray?
I really liked, I hate using words like that, but, you know, episode five, the Samantha Josephson episode, was very like, wow. You know, it's one of those cautionary tales. Samantha got into a car that she thought was her Uber and, you know, did not survive the situation. And it's one of those episodes where it really makes it'll make you second guess your surroundings and things around you. And I think her family and her friends in that were very, they touched me too, just like the Aguilars, just like every family in this series. But like that family, because I think this was the most recent case. This was in 2019. Her case was in 2019. So it was harder. It was a little harder. It made me very sad because you could see this family was still grieving.
And the there's four of them, Mother Marcy, Seymour, Sydney is her sister, and you can see the family just reducing. There was, but as you say, it was 2019, so it's very much a rule for them. They trying to pass ride safety laws in New Jersey called Sammy's Law after her, and the foundation that they run is called What's My Name, so that as you get into your ride or before you get into your ride, you ask the driver, what's my name, or who is the car for? Not exactly. Are you here for Sarah? I know that I, and this is just to say, I always look at the license plate number, but then I'm not a 20-year-old college student with a few drinks on a dark street. I'm not passing any judgment.
Yeah, exactly. So that one, I would definitely say go watch that as well. Sarah, How many magnifying glasses are you going to rate Death in the Dorms out of a possible 5?
That's a really good question. I'm going to give 3 of the episodes themselves 5 magnifying glasses, episode 1, episode 2, and episode 4. I think they were extremely good. And then I'm going to throw out a 4 and a 3, a 4 and a couple of 3s. So I don't know what that comes out to. So for the series, I'm going to give the series 4 stars. I was really impressed by this. And I have to say that this is Thursdays in January. Hulu are dropping an ABC News Studios true crime series every Thursday except the one that's about to come up. And I believe we're going to cover at least one more of them. And this makes me very excited to see how they deal with the next themed lot of standalone cases. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think I want to give it, I'll give it a 4 as well. I was vacillating between 4 and 4.5, but I agree there were a lot of episodes that I found more intriguing than others. But that's just like, that's what you get with these type of series. These type of series, again, you don't have to watch them all. You know, you can just pick and choose which ones sound good to you. That's why they have that sizzle reel at the beginning. You watch that sizzle reel, and if you like it, you keep going. If not, you stop. I think my only knock against this was, like we said, there wasn't much diversity in the storytelling or the victims. We did have two male victims in the 6th episode series, but I also felt like, I'm always going to think about this as a Black woman. No cases of Black students who died. I can think of 2 that popped up into my head when I first heard this title. One was Alexis Crawford, a Clark Atlanta student who was murdered by her roommate and her roommate's boyfriend. And that happened in 2019, a very, very gripping case that as somebody who's in the HBCU community, a historically Black college community, it rocked our community. And it's very unfortunate that we don't hear about Alexis's case that often. And I also think about Jelani Day, a Illinois State University graduate student who he went missing, and the police and the coroner's office basically dragged their feet. His body was found a week or two after he went missing, but sat unidentified in the coroner's office for another 3 weeks before they found out that they did have Jelani. And by the time that they did do a autopsy, they could only say that he drowned, even though the circumstances surrounding his death seem very mysterious, including them finding his car about like a mile away from his body, his clothes a mile away from his body. So because of how the case was investigated, the family has no justice. And I think the lack of media attention for Jelani is very telling. Again, and Jelani was in a fraternity, a historically Black fraternity, and it's one of the only reasons why I know about his case. So I just feel like I wish there was a little bit more representation, because I think there's a lot of cases out there that, again, you know, this isn't just for entertainment consumption. You know, this is to shed light on these crimes, to hope that we can either prevent them in the future and or to help solve the ones that are still unsolved. You know what I'm saying? So it's just very unfair that a lot of crimes that include like Black and African American or other marginalized people go highly underreported, which means they normally go unresolved, you know? So that would be my only, again, me just nitpicking, but I did enjoy the series.
It's more than nitpicking, I think, because even I noticed the lack of a Black victim, and I thought surely we do see, unfortunately, we do see Black people and they're the perpetrators. And I thought, I mean, I know they did it, but when you take the series as a whole, what's the picture that's being painted? So it's not just you. Keep banging that drum. We'll link to some good resources on those 2 cases in the show notes. 4 from both of us. It's so we recommended everybody.
Yes, we definitely do. Definitely go watch it. And if you want to let us know how you feel, let us know. We also did get some feedback from a friend of the pod, Josh Green, of course, the Out of Context. He runs RHAP Out of Context. He said that he actually followed that Christian Aguilar case as it was happening and that he did enjoy that episode. But the biggest thing for him that he saw that happened in a lot of these episodes was it was like, this place is so safe. You can walk home at night wherever you are. Nothing bad will happen, because it's like, you know, bad things happen everywhere, you know. So I agree with Josh there. Thank you so much, Josh, for sending in your comments, because it's true. Like, it's so unfortunate, and we're not telling people to live your life scared, but it's true when they like, oh, an idyllic college town, or we never thought it would happen here. And it's like, you know, it can happen anywhere. So, you know, just try and do the best you can. Stay safe. Be aware.
Look after your friends.
Yes, all of that. Yeah. Yes. So let's move on to our recommendations. Sarah, what do you recommend to our listeners?
Well, I mentioned it at the top, a YouTube channel called That Chapter. We'll be linking the episode to the killing of the Idaho University students in the show notes. This is Mike, young Irishman, who gives us various cases in a very calm, interesting manner. He's curious. He's thoughtful. He's very well read. The episodes are about 30 minutes long, so just enough time to eat your sandwich for lunch and get an overview of the case. I'd been following the killing of these Idaho University students, but I still appreciated his 30-minute sort of roundup, step by step. I find him very calm, non-sensationalizing. He doesn't sensationalize, is what I'm trying to say. But he's also us, because he feels and responds to the events. He's sad about the events. You know this YouTube channel as well, Murray. Would you recommend it?
I do. Yes, I definitely would. I think we talked about that chapter on a previous episode. Mike does a great job in just, I feel like he approaches every case with such deference and very thoughtful manner, very knowledgeable manner. And I did watch this episode a few weeks ago, and it was stunning, because even as somebody who I tried to keep up, you know, he has a lot of stuff on there that I didn't know. And he includes like some body cam footage. He puts everything in a very neat package that makes it very easy to understand. So shout out to him.
The architecture of the house is what I actually got the most out of that chapter. Because in my head it's been a little bit, and also because we have a ground floor and then a first floor, and American needs a first floor where we should have a ground floor. And in fact, Mike says the first floor, the ground floor. But he had not only photographs of the house, but he has a diagram, and it just really shows you how the house is laid out and where everybody was sleeping. Because let's not forget, let's keep in our thoughts the two other roommates who were there during the killings and are still alive, but they must be really going through it, as well as having suspicion cast upon them, of course, which is why I'm saying, please, everybody, hold back your thoughts until we know what, hold back your opinions until we know what's actually happened. So with Mike, you will get facts. He does make remarks, but he will make sure to say that these are just his own remarks. So yeah, That Chapter on YouTube, go and click subscribe. And what about you, Murray? What have you got to recommend today?
After watching a lot of those episodes, like I said, I probably shouldn't have done it to me. I decided to just recommend an OG true crime property, I Survived. You can find it on Hulu. They replay it on FYI for some people, but the OG, I Survived. If you haven't watched it, it's just people telling their stories straight to camera, and they survived their stories. So it's one of those, it's comforting to me to watch, because at least I know that I'm looking at the person as they're telling me their stories, that they, at the very least, the light at the end of the tunnel is that they're here telling their story in their own way. So I definitely, it is one of those shows that makes you feel a little bit better, in a sense that, like, you know, something horrible did happen to these people, but they talk about their resilience and why they survived at the end and how it changes their life and stuff like that. So definitely go check out I Survived if you haven't, if you've been living under a rock. At Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. That's at Crime S-E-E-N R-H-A-P. And you can also email us by sending emails to crimescenerhap@gmail.com.
We're on TikTok occasionally. TikTok. The clock is ticking for another TikTok, but we will get there. It's our newest revolution. We're on TikTok at crime.scene and on Instagram and Facebook now at Crime Scene Podcast. So you can find us anywhere, really. We love messages from you all. We love your comments, your recommendations. And yes, please let us know if there are any guests that you would like us to pursue.
Yes. What have you got going on there, Sarah, and where can the people find you?
Well, the people can find me on Twitter at Sarah Carradine. With the Traders US dropping on the 12th of January, you have time to catch me over on Silent Podcasts with the recaps of the Traders UK. I recap that with Australian Ninja Warrior Sean Bryan. Traders UK is over, but you can still watch it and listen to our recaps, getting you ready for the 12th of January drop of the entire season of The Traitors US.
Oh, wow.
So on this podcast network, RHAP, Rob Sestanino and Puya Zanvakili are going to do a marathon watching and recapping of all the episodes over a couple of days, the 12th and 13th of January. So get in amongst that if you want to. Otherwise, obviously, you can hear their podcasts afterwards. There'll also be a roundtable about the Traders US, and I am looking forward to being on that. Mm-hmm. What about you, Mari?
This week, the Wrestling Room Hop Up podcast came back. So, of course, yeah, me and Matt Scott, every week we bring you the highlights in this the world of wrestling, of pro wrestling. And there was a doozy that happened. Our favorite wrestler came back. She debuted at New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom under a new name. New pseudonym, new everything. Like, we are excited. So if you want to hear us talk about Mercedes Moné, you can go and check us out at on Wrestling Rehab by going to robhasawebsite.com/wrestlingfeed. And, you know, we give you a handy dandy playlist, so you don't even have to watch all of wrestling that me and Matt do. You just check out our playlist in the show notes and you can watch along with us. Right now, that's it for me. I have a few other things in the pipeline, but I'll let you guys know when it comes down.
Ooh,
yes. Next time on Crime Scene, we'll be covering the hatchet-wielding hitchhiker with returning guest Chappelle. You can watch it on Netflix and send us your comments and questions. Thanks to Will from America for the theme music, Tricky Rice for the graphics, and Chelsea Lesser and Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Until next time. Case closed.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.